Good morning, I'm David Ellis, and I welcome you to this edition of Down to Brass Tacks. It's Monday, the 13th day of August 2018, and today we are going to 1:30, and that will now be the new close-off time for Brass Tacks for the time being. Instead of going until 2, we will go to 1:30 so that we could get an opportunity to react to anything major that comes up in the news, but at the same time, we need a little bit of flexibility to do some other things. So we've sought to strike a compromise there. Well, what an interesting weekend we've had. I thought that the discussion that we had on Down to Brass Tacks yesterday was a very interesting one, pulled together by Sanka Price. And surely coming out of that, you get a sense of the magnitude of the problem that this country is facing. There is no magic bullet, no easy fix. And clearly, it reinforces the fact that we are going to find ourselves having to make further sacrifice as a consequence of the state of this Barbados economy. What is most encouraging, though, is that it is recognized that action has to be taken. Some approaches have been outlined, especially what you heard yesterday about what's going to happen with BRA and customs. Of course, one question that, to my mind, still needs an answer is what about the fusion of customs and BRA, which has been a controversial issue, the Barbados Revenue Authority, that is. Then there was a discussion on Saturday, a news conference held by the minister responsible for tourism, in which he spoke about the challenges facing the tourism sector. And that particular news conference showed that notwithstanding all the positives that have been highlighted in the recent past, Barbados does face a crisis there. And of course, there was the annual conference, the 63rd annual conference of the Democratic Labour Party, which was held over the weekend as well. I believe some of you would have heard the speech of outgoing president and former Prime Minister Frondell Stewart. Let us say that we too join in congratulating Ms. Verla de Pisa on being elected president of the Democratic Labour Party. We, as a media house, would sincerely hope that we will see a significant improvement in the relationship between the Democratic Labour Party and ourselves. And you have our commitment that we will work towards that particular goal, because there is no value, really, in having that kind of divide between a major political party and a major media house in the country. Having said that, I think much was said by Mr. Stewart in his outgoing speech, and he talked a little bit about the whole question of corruption in general terms. He alluded to the situation facing ex-minister Donville Innes in the United States. A couple of things he said that stand out for me. One had to do with the comment he made about how some of the people who were leaders of the party caused the members of the General Council to groan because they did not turn up for meetings of the General Council and that sort of thing. Now, the difficulty that I face with that is that if Mr. Stewart was president of the party and prime minister of the country, and he noticed that this was happening, the question is, what were the difficulties that he faced in trying to get the members of the party who were guilty of that kind of conduct to respond in the appropriate manner? The fear is that after 10 years of that kind of conduct, or even 8 years of it, assuming that it became more apparent after he took over following the death of Mr. Thompson, then you develop a culture And that kind of culture is very dangerous to stamp out. It means that whoever is leading the party now will have a greater difficulty, perhaps, in trying to bring that kind of discipline back to the Democratic Labour Party. And notwithstanding the fact that Verla de Pisa will bring her own strengths to the Democratic Labour Party, there is no doubt that she is likely to find herself under a great degree of difficulty from people who sat in Parliament already and consider themselves to be seasoned members of the Democratic Labour Party who have operated at the highest level. And though they, for whatever reason, might have had to concede that she is the better person to lead right now, that wouldn't stop them from giving her a bit of pressure behind the scenes. And that's where the development of that kind of culture becomes a challenge for someone like that. We wish her well, because at the end of the day, the Democratic Labour Party has done a lot of good for this country, but it is tested right now, and it requires a whole new sense of direction, the whole question of how its various internal organs work, how relevant they are. There's a lot of work to be done in that regard. But talking about the Democratic Labour Party, we have here on the telephone line with us Reverend Guy Hewitt, who was High Commissioner to London, he's outgoing High Commissioner to London. And he did make some comments a few days ago suggesting that he had every intention of trying to vie for office in the Democratic Labour Party at the annual conference. Mr. Reverend Hewitt, are you there?
Good morning, David. I am.
Yes. Well, what's your assessment of the outcome of this session?
Well, I mean, like you, I would first join in congratulating Verla de Pisa to be selected as the first female political leader of the Democratic Labour Party. And we know we have, in a sense, broken through, or she has broken through that glass ceiling and has been able to prove that, yeah, women are capable, as we have our first female prime minister and a female governor general. Now, women are very much capable of being at the helm of leadership in this country.
Yeah, but what about your own personal ambition to play a role? What has happened to that?
Well, David, let me say this, and I've said this to people all along. I have never had political ambitions. I've never sought to be a member of parliament, a cabinet minister, or any of such. I have always considered myself to be a public servant, and wherever I have been tasked to serve, whether it is as chairman of the Queen Elizabeth Hospital, whether it was as a director at the Caribbean Examinations Council, whether it was in my current role as High Commissioner for Barbados, the United Kingdom, I have done that and tried to do it to the best of my ability. So I came back here, as I said to people, to be part of a process that said that the Democratic Labour Party is still very much part of the political landscape in Barbados, that while people may feel that the party is down, it is certainly not out. And importantly, it's not just relevant to those, the party faithfuls or the members, but all Bajans, because our strength as a nation is rooted in democratic stability, and the DLP must, and I believe will, continue to write its name on our history's page.
What do you see as the major challenges facing Verla de Pisa and the new executive?
Going to have it's no small challenge that she will face, because she has to now, as you alluded to, organize a leadership team that is able to do a couple of critical things: rebuild the party, to be able to project a vision that is rooted in the philosophy of Errol Barrow. And one of the things that I found puzzling was that of late there has been an absence of his voice, of his philosophy, of his values within the party. And while I accept that there are those leaders who feel, for whatever reason, that they might have to make their mark, I think we know what are the strong roots that the party possesses, and I feel we must remain close to them. But also what she has to do as a leader is instill confidence in the nation. The recent election outcome, as I called it, as a democratic rebellion, as you saw the decimation of the party at the polls, was unprecedented. This was unlike any other election. And therefore, 70% of the populace who voted said to the Democrat Labour Party, we have no confidence in you. And if the DLP is to regain that political foothold in the country, it is going to have to go out to those persons, some of them historically supporters of the DLP, some of them probably even members of the DLP, and say to them, you can count on us going forward.
Well, we all recognize that there is a really tall order associated with all of this right now for the Democratic Labour Party. One question which I suppose other people would want to examine is the role of Frondell Stewart now. To what extent is he perceived as the man behind the scenes trying to determine what will happen to the leadership of the party, trying to steer it? How advantageous is it for him to appear to be behind the scenes? Or should he just go off into the sunset and let these young Turks deal with it?
Well, David, I saw the front page of today's Nation newspaper, and the look on Mr. DePisa's face, I think, spoke volumes. It, to me, revealed what I suspect she knows, that if she links her presidency to that of Mr. Stewart or the previous administration, she's going to suffer for it. I said in London at a DLP forum that they are politically damaged. They lost the confidence of the party. And honestly, I feel that there should have been a move immediately after the election, the general election in May, to clear the decks, to allow persons, new blood, to be brought into the party and to start that rebuilding process. It is necessary, because what we saw, even in the last campaign, that the youth arm of the party, the Young Democrats, played little or no role. And so Comrade DePisa is going to have to be able to mobilize them, because it is from there that she's going to have to find the resources for future leadership. I don't think this is going to be a question of people taking a sabbatical and coming back for a second innings. I think this is very much a case where she has to be able to put together a new team for the future, again, to regain that credibility in the eyes of the masses, in the eyes of the electorate.
Well, I have Peter Wickham. I hope he's been able to join us here on my telephone line. Are you there, Peter?
I'm there, yeah. I'm here.
Yes. So I have Reverend Guy Hewitt on another line. I want to get your first thoughts on the outcome of the weekend annual conference of the Democratic Labour Party and the transition of the presidency from Frondell Stewart to the first female to lead the Democratic Labour Party as president, Verla DePisa. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, a couple of things. I thought the turnout was good, and that was noticeable. I think it's good for the Democratic Labour Party that there is considerable interest. I think in the lead up to the annual conference, and certainly after the election, I was of the view that, quite frankly, none of the candidates represented themselves in the 30. And in my opinion, people who were associated with the Democratic Labour Party closely should have been considered for leadership. And I mean, I did say that, and that's the position I stand by. I think that all things considered, the outcome has really been a good one for the DLP. I like Verla. I have always felt that Verla was someone who was hard done by the Democratic Labour Party over time. When David Thompson died, you recall that I was saying that I felt she should have been the person who should have taken over St. John. And I think that she is a good person, in terms of her leadership potential. But I think the thing that worked best for her is her age. She is younger. And I feel that someone of that vintage will do better, because the battle to reshape the Democratic Labour Party is going to be a long-term one. And I don't think that somebody who is at the age of Leslie Garvin or even a Guy Hewitt is in a position to really take it on.
But there are two, but beyond age, beyond age, one also has to talk about skills, managerial skills, philosophy. We don't know much about Verla Depisa in that regard. And it is against the backdrop of the severe challenges that the Democratic Labour Party faces right now. So I'm not saying it to put her down. I'm just saying in that context, perhaps we need to find out a bit more about who she is and what she's bringing to the table beyond the limited information that we've had so far. What do you think?
Yeah, but I mean, David, that's reasonable, but I also think that we have to look at it in the context of who was available to the DLP at this point. I don't know who else was nominated, but I know that she was unopposed. And my sense is that if you're looking at the names that we heard coming forward, you know, the Eswicks and so on, I think the issue is that she was one of the people among those names, and she was the one that came before. I think kudos to her. I agree that she now has to let us learn about her in the way that Mia Motley also might have. So she will need to rub shoulders, of course. She will need to touch flesh. She will need to explain more about the central philosophy that is driving her and so on. And I think that that is an important part of the process.
Do you see this as do you interpret this to be an appointment for the long haul? I mean, you have annual conferences every year. You can change leadership any year. Do you see this as an appointment that says this is the new leader for the Democratic Labour Party going forward?
I don't know if she is, and frankly, I don't know if anyone in the DLP can say that she is right now either. But I do feel that the DLP is in a situation now where they have to work with what they have. And if she starts a process, and if she finds that by year four, you know, things are not going in the way that they would go. I mean, the DLP has done this in the past. You remember there was a time when Clyde Masker was there. They did a poll and they found that Clyde wasn't resonating. They moved him and they put David Thompson. And I'm saying that it's entirely possible that something like that can happen later. You know, but it's important that whoever is at the helm now, I think, is useful enough within the party that they can take the kind of knock that David Thompson would have been able to take over the years. And I think that that is a good starting point. So, I mean, I don't know if she's going to lead it. I don't know whether she will survive and lose an election and come back and so on. But for right now, I think that the party has put their best foot forward. And when I look at what is available to them, I think that Verla Depisa was the best choice under the circumstances. I think the interesting question will be whether Verla will try to position herself in St. John or St. Philip North, which are the two seats that I think the DLP has a reasonable likelihood of capturing in the next election, or whether she will remain in Christchurch West, which to me is going to be a wasteland politically for the Democratic Labour Party for a long time. So that to me is a more interesting question.
But how can you project to what the Democratic Labour Party has a good chance of winning just mere weeks after the last general election? On what basis can you come to this conclusion?
But David, my swing analysis is well known as the same basis that I used to project what was likely to happen in the last election. The strongest performance were in those two seats. So my sense is that if they're going to recover, they will recover fastest in those two places. Now, St. John has a history. You will recall that the only two boxes that they won in the whole election were in St. John. And I think that is a reflection of the fact that there is a residual strength in St. John. So Philip North is similar if you look at the way that the numbers are. So I'm saying that at this point in time, I mean, we don't know what will happen, but at this point in time, those are the party's two most likely seats. I think I had also written to the effect that if you look at safe seats over the years, a safe seat is a seat that goes over 65% of the vote. The only two seats that are not in that vicinity for the Democratic Labour Party is St. Philip North and St. John. So history could be made next election, and I agree that we may very well find some seats now which are safe, that may be unseated. But if you look at our history so far in Barbados, the history has been that a seat that has been over 60%, 65% support has never been lost. And I think that that is the critical thing that they need to be looking at. So if I were her, I would position myself in St. John. or alternatively St. Philip North. And I think that that would be a good place to start, so that regardless of what happens, she's fighting from a position of strength within having a parliamentary presence, which is something that you can be guaranteed that she stays in Christchurch.
And let me ask you about the role of Frondelle Stewart from here on. What, in your judgment, should that be? I mean, we can assume from all that you have said over the years what you're likely to say now, but you could surprise us.
No, but David, I listened last night with great concern to his speech. And I mean, the fact is that Frondelle Stewart has been at sea for a long time, and I felt that he had an opportunity yesterday to demonstrate that he woke up and he understood
by saying what or doing what?
He hasn't.
What were you expecting him to say?
My economic expectation, my hope, was that he would have said to people, look, I understand that we made some fundamental errors. There are some things that we should have done that we didn't do. And, you know, he could have put in perspective a bad campaign, a bad election, a bad government, and sent instructions to the next leader regarding what needed to change and what needed to be done. He did none of that. He essentially said he did nothing wrong. It was unlikely that we would have won 3 terms. And, you know, even in terms of the dominance issue, he didn't really deal with it in any way that would suggest that he understood the nature of the challenge that he's facing. So, quite frankly, no. If Frondelle Stewart is willing to make a financial donation to the DLP, they're going to have a lot of financial problems. If I were them, I would accept it. But I don't think he needs to take any further role. And I think Bernard DePisa would do well to distance herself as far as possible from all that he represents and to start to build a new path and a new ethos within the Democratic Labour Party.
He did refer to this question of dark money and dark data. I think he made a reference to the situation with respect to Brexit and how the social media was manipulated to be able to influence the outcome of elections. And then he said that there were similar concerns which had been raised in the Caribbean and referred to the need to regulate social media and hold the owners accountable. To me, it seemed as though he was projecting the suggestion that part of the loss had to do with the manipulation of the social media.
I don't think that he's wrong in that regard. I probably fell asleep at that point because I had that challenge during the big parts of his speech. But there's nothing wrong with that statement, and I agree that social media clearly has to be regulated. I mean, that was the Brexit example. That was the problem in the United States of America. That was the problem in the UK.
And it stands to reason. Yeah. The social media could have been used in this sophisticated manner to use dark money and dark data to influence the outcome of the elections in Barbados.
I don't disagree that it could have happened, but I think what was more likely to happen in the last election was that a lot of his support would have come from those sources. I mean, I already know that social media in Barbados had to be manipulated. The working material was there. You had a bad situation, and that's what people spoke to in social media. But I'm all one for regulating social media. I think the environment needs to be cleaned up, and I think the sooner the better. I don't feel that if the social media environment had been regulated, that the Barbados Labour Party would have done any worse, the DLP would have done any better. So perhaps if it was regulated, the DLP would have done worse. Because a lot of the nastiness that was coming across on social media was clearly appeared to have come from within the DLP portal. So that's my sense, that I think if that point was made by him, it's a good point. Social media has to be cleaned up, the sooner the better. And I think that if he's going to be part of the DLP, he's going to be part of a process that says, let's have some kind of policies in place that deal with the social media environment, the sooner the better. Because we can only benefit from that as a nation.
Okay, well, I thank you both. And Peter Wickham, and we also heard earlier from Reverend Guy Hewitt as we looked at what's been happening with the opposition. Democratic Labour Party is still an opposition party. Please, those of you who want to say that because it does not have a seat in Parliament, you can't call it the opposition Democratic Labour Party, please don't go there at all. It is still an opposition party, okay? Thank you all. I'll introduce you to somebody else when we come right back. Down to brass tacks. And I've got a younger Barbadian in the audience here in the studio today with us, as well as a special guest. In Raphael Saul. You can tell Barbadians a little bit more about yourself before we get into your thoughts on what's happening in the country, the DLP, the economy, because we need to reach out to more people and get other perspectives on what's happening in the country. So who are you?
Thank you so much for, first of all, having me on and giving me this opportunity, David. I'm grateful to be here, excited to be in the studio with such esteemed individuals. My name is Raphael Saul. I am a husband of one, a father of two. I'm an attorney at law, and I'm also an entrepreneur and a businessman. So in terms of my interests, they are both professional and personal as it relates to how our country is going economically, socially. You know, I certainly have a vested interest, not just in where we are, but certainly in where we are going, because I am very passionate. I believe I have a very wide vision for what I believe Barbados can become, and certainly the opportunities I'd like to see the younger generation receive to grow and to develop and to be able to make meaningful contributions to society at large, to our political landscape, and certainly be given opportunities to advance themselves economically as well, David. So this is something I am very excited about. I'm feeling very grateful for. I was glad to just catch a snippet of what the conversation was a few minutes ago. And I'm certainly interested, even along those lines, David, of hearing from not just what will be the new guard of the Democratic Labour Party, but also get an idea of what the ethos of even the Young Democrats is at this time and what their potential contribution is and will be as the Democratic Labour Party rebuilds and goes forward.
Your own thoughts on where Barbados is right now and the role that people like yourself can play in shaping it?
I believe Barbados is in a challenging place at this time. I don't think that can be denied. The swing of the last political exercise, which we just completed, perhaps may have given some persons a false sense of comfort or security that now with a new guard, so to speak, at the helm, all will be fine and dandy, everything will be rosy and so on. But this really is perhaps the most difficult time we're now going to have to go through and navigate as a people. And I think that the people of Barbados can be best served by, as much as we can and as much as we've expressed a unanimous confidence in the present administration, give them the support that they would need, but also don't rely on them to be our rescue. I believe that we all can play a part in contributing to our own salvation, so to speak, in this sense, and, you know, creating a better Barbados for each of us. Whether it be each person, you know, exercising a greater degree of thrift, persons being more creative, and so on. Perhaps this time, as difficult as it might be, might end up bringing out the best in us, David, as opposed to just crushing us and making us experience challenge and adversity.
This is Down to Brass Tacks. Call us. 434-1790. Hello.
Hello, good morning.
Yes, good morning.
I want to talk about this conference, but before I do that, I want to do two quick things.
You want to talk about public transport?
You bet, man. I want to know, why are there two different management systems between immigration to despite some bus terminal and the Fairside Street? Why is that? Buses start running before 6 o'clock in the morning. The bus terminal at Fairside Street officially opens at 10 on to 6 to so that commuters can catch these 6 o'clock back. At Spikestone, you have a situation where the bus terminal down there starts selling tokens at 7 o'clock and finish at 3. That's from Tuesdays and Mondays. On Saturdays, from Wednesday to Saturday, it's 11 to 7 p.m. Does that make sense to have those things when you have a terminal starting duties at 6 o'clock in the morning and last bus leave the terminals at 12:05? It does not make sense. Not to me. The second advice is, and I know it's a court case, and I don't go ahead and defend this time, but the farm mill and the cement plant should not be a court case. It should not have been allowed to happen. We are in a situation where cement does can easily freeze the enter flour producing institution, or for want of a better word, it shouldn't be there. And you know how court cases stay all on the table here. So as I speak, a lot of us could be dying just by consuming flour that's being produced at the farmers. But yet, I can see signs on ads on TV, no swimming in the port, no fishing, no all kind of things. I'm criticizing that, but that cement plant is a threat to people's lives. It should not be in court. It should not have happened. Now, this conference, the only thing the former prime minister can advise anybody on is how to lose an election. It was all about bad leadership from the very beginning. And this talk about world reprise, I'm not impressed by this. You know what I'm impressed? I'm impressed with none of them who sat on that platform at Waterford and heard the insult and did not get up and walk away. I am not impressed. And I think they have a lot of guts into even trying them to regain political office. They should not be considered. If it was at our conference, I would have walked out. If you're going to rebuild, you got to rebuild with new lumber. All the building materials should be new. There are the, those ones are the cause of Barbados being in the situation that is in. And as far as I am personally concerned, it's very unforgiving. I ain't going to forget. No, I ain't going to forgive them. You see people suffering every day. You had a person who had the position of prime minister, because being a prime minister and holding the position of prime minister is two different things. And you had ministers doing as they like. And he said or did nothing. 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 I would want to entertain anything from him, any comments at all from him. The best thing that can happen is to completely sabotage with all of them who were involved in the last election, including the president.
All right. Thank you very much. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yes, I just want to make a brief contribution because much of what Peter has said, I agree with, and also Mr. P made a very valid point coming on to the end. What I would say, let me make it clear, I am not a supporter of the Democratic Labour Party. I am a supporter of the Barbados Labour Party. And the new president that the BLP elected, track record is nothing to carry the Barbados, the Democratic Labour Party forward. I have said in another place, it would take them forward to the political cemetery. Because her record, as you know, Mr. Ellis, she ran twice in Christchurch West. She won one box only, ZE1. She's not an impressive speaker. She has to learn to handle the platform. She allows some minors to offset her by heckling her. And that was publicized. So how you can put somebody like that to lead the recovery of a party?
But what were the options?
The options?
Yes.
There are young people.
Like who?
I don't know the names of them. They're young people in the Democratic Labour Party. Because they're going to need about 20 years to talk about recovering. And Mr. P is right. You can't rebuild with old board. You got to rebuild with new material. New material. And since it's a political party and not a physical structure that we have built, you got to look for young people with potential. You have a person in the studio there. I've never heard of him before. I don't know if he's BLP, DLP, or not LP. But you need people like that, young people, who is unknown and was not a part of the last DLP debacle, to start rebuilding a party. And that is what is important. And I hope they understand that the Barbados Labour Party is full of young people, the ones that are in Parliament and the ones that are waiting to go in. So if they think they got at least 20 years to for people to take them serious again, the people of Barbados, not the political operatives like me, is the average person. You could imagine that a party that won government and all that could only win two boxes in the whole island, Mr. Ellis, and one of the boxes in St. John, they won by two votes.
Okay, let me get a reaction to all that you are saying from the guest with us in the studio today, Raphael Saul. What are your thoughts?
Hey, good morning, caller.
I'm
not here to declare BD or no LP as you would have suggested, but I want to go back to a point you made earlier, and it connects with something that Mr. Ellis would have said as well. We haven't had the opportunity to examine Verla de Pisa from a perspective of her leadership capacity, or as it relates to the philosophy she would wish to apply from the perspective of leading this newly formulated or new to be formulated party. So is it fair for us? Now, I'm just asking if it's fair. I'm not asking you here to go BLP or DLP on me. I'm just asking, is it fair for us to make an assessment of whether or not she was the person fit to be chosen to lead the new party when we have not yet had the opportunity to scrutinize her from the perspective of somebody who's sitting in the seat of leadership?
We have heard Verla de Pisa on CBC for almost 10 years on Saturday night, giving her views, her political views. We have heard Verla de Pisa in the Senate. And if we can't judge her from the last 10 years, I don't understand what you'll be saying. She has not been able to convince a number of people in Christchurch West that they should have voted for her, even if she didn't win. Even if you could win, there could be 10 boxes, and you could win 4 of them and still lose the election. Sometimes you could win 6 of them and lose the election. But she won one, ZE1, over in the Sargent Village area. And my argument is she is not a strong person to be the leader or to revive a political party. We have heard her. She is not new. I don't know why people think that Verla de Pisa is new. And I, Mr. Ellis, you probably heard her on Saturday nights being interviewed with other people. Guy Samirs was one, Hal Gollop.
I didn't used to watch it, so she's new to me in that regard.
She's new to you, but ask her
in that regard.
To watch it. But I used to watch it. I used to listen to it. So they're not serious.
Saturday night is a difficult time for me to be watching television. Especially something as, hard sell as that.
But so people would know of her views, and the views were not very impressive to many people. And look at
But you know, I want to say something to you, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can hear people talk for many years. Look, Theresa May, for instance. Nobody was really interested in what she had to say until she became prime minister, you know. It's when you become the leader that there is a renewed focus on what you stand for, what are your values, what is your sense of direction. So to that extent, even though she might have been talking all that time, and that she was in the Senate and all of that, but when you get to the point now of being the leader, there is a difference in how people are looking at you and what they want to hear from you. So I think that's where she is now.
But other people would have projected leadership qualities. If you look at our present prime minister, for instance, you know where she stood on a number of issues. You know where she stood before she was the leader, because she was leader and then she got knocked out. And then she come back as leader again. You knew of her leadership qualities. So I am saying that if you're going to bring back a loser to lead the DLP, why the loser got to be a loser like Verla de Pisa? They had other losers that would have had a better leadership qualities, but people had rejected the Reverend Gayue. Is correct. They were rejected by the electorate in this country, and none of them, including Verlis de Pisa, would help to revive the Democratic Labour Party. They were rejected, Mr.
Okay.
Ellis.
Okay, I'll just say this to you. One more point. I have heard people say that David Thompson was never going to become Prime Minister of this country. He ran and lost in elections prior to winning in 2008. In the lead-up to this last election here, I heard people say that Mia Motley could not win the election either. We hear these things all the time.
But
you know, and a lot of it don't turn out to be true at all. I mean, a lot depends upon the circumstances that are prevailing at a given point in time.
But if you analyze them, you will see that Miss Motley and David Thompson were potential political leaders in this country.
Yeah, but Ms. Motley also served in cabinet. And having served in cabinet, you make mistakes along the way. I mean, even yesterday when you heard Mr. Stewart speaking, he was talking about the Crab Hill project, you know. So along the way, you make mistakes that can also be fatal errors. In this instance, she has not made enough fatal errors to find herself not being in a position to lead Barbados as she sought to do so. So I think it's premature. The bottom line of what I'm saying to you is that coming out so stridently against the choice of Verla de Pisa right now, to my mind, may be premature. However, let me say this. Once you decide that you're going to take on the leadership, you have to be prepared for all that goes with it. And that means that you will come under a scrutiny that may appear to be harsh at times, but that goes with the territory. Okay? Thank you very much.
Thank you.